This is an interview with J. Francisco Hidalgo of the University of Southern California Ethnic Studies Project by Joanne Maples at Loyola University, Los Angeles, Marymount College, on May 9, 1972, at 8:45 a.m. Mr. Hidalgo, could you tell us about the formation of the UMAS and the Chicano college students' involvement in civil rights during the mid-60s? Specifically, why didn't the Chicano students organize prior to this time when everybody else seemed to be organizing?
There were several things that led the Chicano student to organize at this time. To begin with, this was the time in history, as far as the Southwest Chicanos are concerned, when Chicanos started to go to college, not in significant numbers, but in enough numbers to create a movement that had a lasting impact on society. It's hard to research whether there were Chicano student movements in the past. We know there were some Chicano students in college before the 60s, but I don't think either their numbers or the political atmosphere were conducive for organizing on a massive level. Also, in the 60s, we had the precedent of the black movement. Now, I can't say that we mimic the blacks, because there had been earlier Mexican labor organizing movements from as early as the turn of the century. The issues were different, too. Ours put more of an emphasis on education and culture. Theirs more on economic and racial discrimination in terms of the pigmentation of their skin. In the early 60s, we saw the civil rights movement. The Chicanos became part of that movement in the mid-60s, partly because when the statistics and information began to emerge about the degree of discrimination against the blacks, Mexican-Americans also began to say to themselves, the discrimination we experience is pretty much the same as the blacks are complaining about, and in some cases worse. For example, in the years of education in the Southwest, the Chicano had fewer years of education than the blacks. Their income level were pretty much the same, and experiences and prejudice. And the history of discrimination could be cited by both blacks and Chicanos. But Chicanos began to bring out the fact that he had been in the Southwest long before either the white or the black, and that this claim to justice, therefore, his claim to justice therefore had more justification. Another factor was the JFK era, the era of concern for the poor, concern for the underdog, and this went right along with the civil rights movement. The student movement had different origins in different parts of the Southwest. My observations about the student movement are naturally limited to the Southern California area, and my observations about the rest of the southwestern regions are limited in scope. We had dealings with other Chicano students from other parts of the Southwest, and our relationship was never intimate because of differences in viewpoints. The UMAS group, which I'll use as an example, sprung up about 1966-67. It was based in the Los Angeles area. It grew gradually from a handful of colleges to a number, which became very difficult to control. It became very difficult to call it one group. We used to have centralized UMAS meetings, but that became very cumbersome. San Diego had another student group. The Bay Area had a student group called the Mexican American Student Confederation. The Texas area had another group. New Mexico had its own, and so did Arizona. But I think the Los Angeles group, together with the San Jose group, were instrumental in spearheading the student movement in the Southwest. Los Angeles was seen as the initiator of student-centered issues about Chicano. Los Angeles was seen as the capital of the Southwest. student movement had different names in different cities, and this was seen as a disadvantage by the Chicano students at one point. This was 1968. Black students had a common name for their student movement called the BSU. Eventually they segmented into different names, different initials. The Chicano youth had different organizations, Brown Berets, School Month in LA, and other student groups in the Southwest. The students in the Southwest decided they wanted to share a common name. So after a series of conferences, sessions, and workshops, the name was finally changed. It's difficult to pinpoint the declaration of the decision to change from UMAS to MECHA. Some say it happened officially in Denver at the Crusade for Justice Conference. I personally was at a conference in San Diego, attended by students and Chicano teachers, faculty, and administrators, in which a student caucus met and proposed that we should find a common name for the whole student movement. Several names were proposed, and the one that emerged was MECHA. Now, I'm not sure if MECHA, if the name MECHA, had come out sometime before that, or if we were original with it. I'm not exactly sure how the transition occurred from UMAS to MECHA, but the important thing is the quiet occurred. As I mentioned before, we wanted a common name. The more important reasons are found in the name MECHA. MECHA stands for Movimiento Estudiantil Chicano de Aztlán. Movimiento, because the students no longer wanted to be considered a social group, an organization that was formed to throw dances and parties and sell tickets and sell posters. We wanted to be recognized officially as a movement, so we stuck the name Movimiento in there. Estudiantil was the word that was contested because some were not sure whether we should retain a student identity or encompass non-student groups as well. In the end, the decision was to retain the student identity. Chicano was in there to replace the Mexican-American hyphenation in UMA. And at the time, the word Chicano was becoming more popular than Mexican-American. Basically, the same people that were involved in UMA were instrumental in forming MECHA. And at this time, they were beginning to recruit more students from the barrio, and a lot of these students were more familiar with the word Chicano than the original UMAS organizers had been. We knew what it meant, but somehow it seemed that the new breed of students used it more. So we adopted the word Chicano and tried to give it a form of legitimacy by including it in the name MECHA. The last letter, A, stands for Aztlán. It's difficult to define Aztlán in physical terms. Some will say that Aztlán is the Southwest itself, and that the Southwest is the origin of the Aztecs. Others will say that Aztlán is to be found in what is now Nayarit, Mexico, along the western coast of Mexico. Others will say that Aztlán is only a spiritual term, referring to the land where the Chicano lives. The word is being used more and more. While not a great percentage of people know the meaning of it, including Chicanos, it is beginning to pick up some legitimacy in bibliographies and literature. Aztlán technically refers to the point of origin of the Aztecs, whatever that location might be, the origin from which they started on their journey to what is now the Mexico City area, where they finally settled according to mythology. One of the more important transitions from Pumas to Mecha is to be found in the fact that Movimiento Estudiantil Chicano de Aztlán is something you say in Spanish, while UMA, United Mexican American Students, is something you say in English. This is important because the cultural nationalism of the students expressed itself overtly in that English was no longer to be taken for granted as the everyday language. Spanish was introduced here legitimately as a language that has some form of equality with English. So within the word Mecha, you find indicators of a transition in philosophy.
This is an interview with Francisco Hidalgo for the ST Ethnic Studies Project by Joanne Maples at Loyola University Marymount College on May 12, 1972 at 10 o'clock a.m.
In the late 60s, the Plan de Santa Barbara triggered the introduction of the Chicano Studies idea. There were some Chicano Studies programs throughout the state, throughout the Southwest, but the Plan de Santa Barbara, along with other workshops and conferences, brought in the idea as a full-fledged objective and movement. The introduction of Chicano Studies became a new issue with campus groups. Along with Chicano Studies was a struggle to bring on a greater number of Chicano students onto the campus, introduce courses that Chicano students considered relevant, and to establish some type of working relationship with the Chicano communities, either the surrounding communities or at least nearby communities within the same city. Now, let me backtrack a little then. So, as a way of introduction to the ideologies within the movement, and also as an approach to the question of identity, and then we'll get into other issues like walkouts, relationships with the older groups, and militancy. As you might have gathered, Pumas and early Mecha actually began in Los Angeles as a clique of students. After a series of conferences and workshops, the group expanded. We began with very simple issues. For example, we began by asking ourselves, what direction shall we take? Shall we go the route of integration or separatism? What shall we call ourselves? What does it mean to be called Chicanos? What type of relationship should we have with our parents? And so forth. These are very basic questions. The group expanded at a pretty astounding rate because there was a dormant desire to organize around such issues as education, economic exploitation, police brutality, overproportionate number of Chicanos in Vietnam, suppression of the language and culture, unemployment, the farm worker issue, Chicano studies, the increasing number of Chicanos on campuses, political representation, health services, and so forth. There were other issues that were of interest to different subgroups within the movement, within the student group, student movement. I've already talked about the organizational development of the student movement. Now I want to treat the ideological development. I mentioned some of the factors in the beginning that tended to promote the Chicano student movement. Some of these were the campus atmosphere and the number of Chicanos on campus, the civil rights era issue, the JFK era, but I didn't mention the fact that in the 60s we saw the student power movement, which tended to accelerate the pace at which Chicanos became involved on campuses. These Chicano students were developing philosophies about how to promote the movement, such as how people, when asked what the movement was about, how to respond to the institutions. The prevailing ideology was cultural nationalism. For some it meant some form of Indianism, which means going back and identifying with the pre-Columbian forms of culture in Mexico. They were equating that with Chicanismo. Indianism was one form of expression of cultural nationalism, but a rather distorted one. When Chicanos were asked whether their objectives were to integrate or to separate, they usually gave a response that revolved around the concept of self-determination. The answer could not be as simple as to say we're going to integrate totally into society. That hadn't been done for 100 years, so there was no reason to believe it was going to happen now. And naturally, separatism, on the other hand, was not a realistic option. So the concept of self-determinism sprang up as a pretty popular one among the Chicanos. Along with the ideological development was the quest for identity among the Chicanos. Now, every time we have a new group spring up, whether it's a new racial group, any group that has for itself a new identity, then the quest for that identity is always there. In Mexico, for hundreds of years, the question remained, are we Indians or are we Spaniards? And we finally established a realistic compromise that we're mestizos, as expressed by the revolution of 1910. In the Southwest, although we're not a new racial group and not a new cultural group, we are a new cultural political group. In essence, we know we are not Mexican because when we cross the border, we are often criticized as being gringos, imported Mexican, some form of mutated Mexican. We know we are not Anglo-Saxon. We know that racially, and we know that culturally. The word American, which had served as a useful term for older generations of Mexican Americans, was much too nebulous for a group that was seeking some type of distinctive identity. So the word Chicano, which in the past had been used primarily among ourselves, now became legitimized as a public term. You can see that in the word Mecha. There were Chicanos who called themselves Chicanos even during the creation of UMAS, but publicly we were Mexican-Americans. With the creation of Mecha, we saw the legitimization of the word Chicano and the desire to publicize the word as a public term. This identity, in essence, was expressed through the vehicle of cultural nationalism, which meant using not necessarily English per se or Spanish per se, but the language of the home, whatever it may be, the culture of the home without shame and with a desire to legitimize that language and that culture. The walkouts were actually high school initiated walkouts. They were initiated by high school students from East Los Angeles, and these sparked the call for reform and education. Some of the reforms were not as profound as we might hope, but they were rather important to the students and parents who were involved in the walkout. The walkout promoted more adult involvement also, because suddenly adults were faced with the choice of siding with their kids or siding with the school system. So what we saw here was the participation filtering not only into the older groups, but also into the younger groups. It was no longer limited to college students. Now, speaking of older groups, for example, the LULAC, the GI Forum, CSO, and MAPA, they began to redefine their objectives in response to the movement that had been initiated by the younger students. However, even with the redefinition of their objectives, they continued to be service and referral groups. This is what they had been traditionally. They wouldn't change their names and they didn't change their basic functions. But they were, in a sense, reactivated. Some of them had been pretty dormant for years now. Militancy was something that was difficult to measure because a lot of it was underground. In the beginning, the Brown Berets were seen as the militants. These were the militants of the newspapers. Even activists who were not Brown Berets were branded as Brown Berets. Later, it was the Chicano Moratorium organizers. The moratorium can safely be called an expression of militancy because it was an overt action, and it was a challenge not only to local authorities but to the federal government as well. The issue here, of course, was the overproportionate number of Chicanos in Vietnam, but there was another issue that rode along with it, and that was the issue of police brutality. The pattern here was similar to the pattern followed in other groups. The original issues were accompanied by the issue that resulted as a consequence of demonstrating for those issues. Police brutality was a piggyback cause. In very recent months, we've seen the Chicano Liberation Front spring up around the Los Angeles area. This is a group that is very difficult for me to define and explain because, number one, I have no contact with it. Number two, because it's underground. It's there, and it does have something in common with earlier militant groups. And it has a Marxist orientation. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily communists, but the orientation of their philosophy does tend to be rather Marxist. Recently, government-subsidized agencies and Chicano Studies departments on different campuses and other more diverse, more splintered non-student groups have now taken the initiative. They have taken over from where the students left off. We can't say that the students are inactive, but the impact that the students are having is becoming less and less as these other groups take over. Also, the students are going into the graduate schools and professions looking for issues that are important but not necessarily sensational or newsworthy. Of course, one factor is that in the beginning, anything that involved Chicanos was newsworthy because of the novelty of the issues. But now, even important issues are left out of the news simply because they are no longer novel. Standards that have traditionally been used for entrance into education are now being questioned with more intensity, and they are being changed little by little, largely because of the efforts on the part of Chicano students and Chicano studies and people who are involved in bringing in more Chicanos from the barrio and offering them financial aid. The movement that was sparked by students has now grown to the point where the issues are too big for the students to handle without community support and government participation. Change is still the incentive for action. Self-determinism and cultural nationalism are still the dominant philosophies. But the institutionalization and legitimization of these goals will assure us that the progress we've made here, the progress we've made is here to stay.